ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस बोथ मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us.
We have just now finished the first part of the Path of Devotion, Bhakti Yoga by Swami Vivekananda. Therein, Swamiji discusses that certain preparations are to be needed, to be made before we can even enter into the path of devotion. Not only the path of devotion, but to acquire anything great, we need a lot of preparations. All these preparations go by one name, they culminate in one goal. The preparations is only the part of the path. It is only traveling the path. It is only just to begin the journey. All these lead to one aim, which is a frightening word, renunciation. Renunciation is the very cornerstone of not only spiritual achievement, but also of any worldly achievement. Swami Vivekananda summarizes these points so beautifully here. I read from him. We have now finished the consideration of what may be called the preparatory bhakti and are entering on the study of the parabhakti or supreme devotion. We have to speak of a preparation to the practice of the supreme devotion. All such preparations are intended only for the purification of the soul. The repetition of names, the rituals, the forms and the symbols, all these various things are for the purification of the soul. The greatest purifier among all such things, a purifier without which no one can enter the regions of this higher devotion, is renunciation. This frightens many, yet without it there cannot be any spiritual growth. In all our yogas, this renunciation is necessary. This is the stepping stone and the real center and the real heart of all spiritual culture, renunciation. This is religion, renunciation. When the human soul draws back from the things of the world and tries to go into deeper things, when man, the spirit, which has here somehow become concretized and materialized, understands that he is thereby going to be destroyed and to be reduced almost into mere matter, and turns his face away from matter, then begins renunciation. Then begins real spiritual growth. There was a great social psychologist by name Eric Fromm, and he had written a very insightful book. I can always almost call it a practical Vedantic book, The Art of Loving. It's a quite a big book, not very big, but very thoughtful book. It needs very careful study, but at the end he summarizes, and incidentally he is one of the most succinct and beautiful writers. He knows how to summarize his discussion into the simplest form of language which anyone can understand very easily. And in that conclusion about the practice of love, here are certain points, and when you hear them, you will come to the conclusion It was not Eric Fromm who is talking. It was Swami Vivekananda who is talking. Let us start this. I felt this is very necessary before we go into Swami Vivekananda's description of the supreme devotion. Eric Fromm, by the way, calls it the art of loving. It's an art, and like any other art, it needs certain preparations. This is how he begins. The practice of any art has certain general requirements, quite regardless of whether we deal with the art of carpentry, medicine, or the art of love. So, what are the things that are required? First, the practice of an art requires discipline. I shall never be good at anything if I do not do it in a disciplined way. Anything I do, only if I am in the mood, maybe a nice or amusing hobby, but I shall never become a master in that art. So what is discipline? You know, the funny quip of a great writer, I can resist anything but temptation. What else have you to resist if it is not temptation? The point here is, discipline is something which we do not want. Modern man is absolutely hates discipline, and yet he is forced at gunpoint to be a disciplined man. Go to the office half an hour late and try to come out half an hour earlier. See what will happen to your job, especially now with contract jobs, you see. It is not a permanent job. So, it seems modern man is highly disciplined man. He gets up and he goes to the office at the correct time and then comes out of it, even he comes late. And he must be highly disciplined man, because 5 days in a week, he's for 8 hours, he is disciplining himself. But no, as soon as he comes out of the office, what do you think he will do? He will do anything but practice art of discipline. He wants to just relax. The word relax, we all use it. You have a right to enjoy yourself. You have a right to relax. What does that word mean? Not relaxing. Be indisciplined. Do whatever you want to do. That is the meaning of the word relaxing. The problem is not only that of discipline in the practice of the particular art, say practicing every day a certain amount of hours, but it is that of discipline in one's whole life. Now remember, an art is not a profession. It is not even a hobby. It is the very heart of life. If a person says, I am a painter, I am a musician, it is not a hobby. Now, 1 or 2 hours he will sing or he will paint or he will write poetry. It is his very love. You know, you heard the lives of great artists, whether it is Beethoven or Van Gogh or great scientists. 24 hours their mind is centered on that particular subject. You know Van Gogh, what happened? He was considered to be mad. He went mad. Was he really mad? From our standpoint, yes. But from the heart's standpoint, he was a man who was totally dedicated. He was prepared to suffer. He was prepared even to die, but not to give up his art, because that was more of his life than his ordinary life. That's why he had gone mad. Sri Ramakrishna was called mad. Do you know that? Many people consider him very mad, and he himself has accepted. He said, I am mad. The whole world is mad. So there is nothing strange in my being mad. The only difference is, others are mad for enjoyment, for name, for fame. I am mad after God. But he was a very commonsensical man. You know, Swami Vivekananda thought Sri Ramakrishna was mad. He was a monomaniac, he thought in the beginning. And many people tried to cure that madness. Even his own mother also thought he was mad. And in Indian, the mothers have a peculiar idea. Any type of madness can be cured by marriage. But there is a problem with this kind of madness, you know. There was a man who wanted to marry. Nobody was prepared to marry, so he became mad. Now it's a big problem because his madness cannot be cured until, you see, he is married. And he cannot be married until his madness is gone. How are you going to solve the problem? So Sri Ramakrishna's mother tried that method, brought her son and tried to get him married. The idea is, madness means absolute focusing upon one particular idea to the detriment of everything else in life. A person is neglecting eating, drinking, sleeping and social contacts, everything, and focused on only one thing. Many times we also feel, you know, there are many types of madnesses. One type of madness is person becomes completely irrational or fanatic, terrorist. The other type of madness is a person is completely absorbed in something. For ordinary people, it's very difficult to separate these two. Sri Ramakrishna was not irrational, anything but irrational. But he was completely absorbed, possessed as it were. And any great man, greatness means being possessed by something. The greatness is proportionate to the amount of being possessed by a particular idea, whether it's patriotism, or art, or science, or of course religion. The saint is a madman. So, this getting married means what? See, the man's mind will be diverted to from the subject in which he is fixed. This is the simple psychological, you know, argument the people have got. But it doesn't work. As there was a scientist, and he was so intent upon his science, discovery of science, it so happened he was dating a woman, and they fixed a date for marriage. And that day he was troubled in his mind from early morning. There is something very important, today. What is it? After a long time he remembered that day he was to be married. Immediately he phoned his fiancée and said, look, this is my condition. I don't think I will be able to make you happy. Better get somebody else. You know, he was a very sensible man. He was happy. He made the other person also happy. How many of us can claim that? So, is to be absorbed completely for whole life. You know, at moments, we also become mad. And this kind of madness is only emotional outburst. We have to be very intelligent in separating these two. You read some inspiring book, or speak with somebody who is inspiring you, or watch even a film which is very inspiring. You feel that you would like to dedicate your whole life for the sake of God. And you will see, I am also like Sri Ramakrishna. I am having intense longing for God realization. There was an American in one of our centers, I heard, that he became this kind of emotional wreck. So he read how Sri Ramakrishna one day was in the shrine and he was longing for God realization. Then he saw a sword hanging there. So he went, clutched the sword and said, Mother, if you do not reveal yourself to me, I am going to kill myself. And of course the mother revealed herself. So this American read it. So went to a top of a building and cried out, O Ramakrishna, if you do not show yourself to me, I am going to jump from this building. Of course Ramakrishna didn't appear. He jumped, broke his bones, suffered, made others also suffer. Why do you think that, why Sri Ramakrishna did not come? He really meant it, because that was a temporary emotional outburst. Do you think after 5 minutes will that stay? It won't be staying. We are all in that condition, highly emotional people. You know what is emotion? Do you know what is email? Electronic mail. What is emotion? Electronic motion. 1 minute you say, I love. The other minute you say, no, I don't. So, this discipline must be for whole life. Now, what can make this discipline? It is like the question of, a man wanted to get married, but can't get married because he is mad, and he is mad because he can't get married. This discipline is like that. Why is there no discipline in our lives? Because we have no abiding interest. our modern man's mind is a basket of various fruits. It's 5 minutes interest in this, 5 minutes interest in this, 5 minutes interest in that. So he cannot focus his mind at all. There is no abiding deep interest for anything, not to speak of religion, but anything. Why doesn't he have an interest? Because abiding interest can come only when there is discipline. And why there is no discipline? Because there is no interest. Now it is a vicious circle. Where do we start? Start with some discipline. Get up in the morning and study holy books and pray and meditate to God. And again you do it in the evening. What do you do in between? Do you give a holiday for spiritual discipline? It is 24-hour discipline. It is a big struggle. But let us do it slowly, gradually, without giving up. Meanwhile, like emotional outbursts, you say, no, emotional outbursts are also dictated by many factors, influenced by many factors, including weather. If it is cloudy weather, our devotion to God will be very sad, you know. We all suffer from a disease called SAD, S-A-D. You know what it is? Seasonal affectation disorder. Our devotees have been suffering it from today morning until now. Only when the sun came, their faces are a little bit brighter. So even weather, circumstances, friends, experiences, all these things affect our faith, our discipline, our emotions. What is discipline? Discipline means don't worry about your emotional states, whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not. You have decided to do something, you will do it. Until that determination comes, it is not possible to be great in anything. Not to speak of religion. So the problem, as Eric Fromm says, is not only that of discipline in the practice of the particular art, say practicing every day a certain amount of hours, but it is that of discipline in one's whole life. Modern man has exceedingly little self-discipline outside of the sphere of work. Without such discipline, however, life becomes shattered, chaotic, and lacks in concentration. One of the interesting points is why we are so less self-disciplined, because with the very way the modern life is organized is, we have all become cogs in a vast machine called modern life. It leaves very little freedom for us. In the past, the desires were less, time was more. And, you know, you heard about the caste system, or in the West, what is called the guild system. A blacksmith's son becomes a blacksmith. A goldsmith's son becomes a goldsmith. A carpenter's son becomes a carpenter. A priest's son becomes a priest. So, their vocations are fixed. There is no competition. They do it because they accepted it as their life. Now, here in modern life, many problems are. One problem is the vast amount of choice that we have. And every choice is exceedingly tempting. Whatever choice we make, we regret. And, you know, it is a funny way of saying, you know. It is marrying is like eating in a restaurant. Please don't take offense. As soon as a man gets married, like a man in the restaurant, you know, he orders something. And when the waiter supplies it, he looks at his neighbor and starts regretting, why did I not order that? As soon as he gets married, he starts thinking, why did I not marry the other woman? So much of choice is there in life. Uchi, one great thinker called Future Shock, he wrote a book about it. You see, one of the causes of discontent in our modern life is, let you say you want to buy a MP3 player, for example, and go into an electronic shop. There are hundreds of varieties out there. Whatever you buy, you are left with discontent because you think maybe the other model is much better. And to add to this insult, Next day you will see, you perhaps you have paid 50 pounds. Next day it is selling for 20 pounds. You regret and say, why I was such a fool, I could have waited for one day, I would have got for 20 pounds. So, interest has to be cultivated. Interest comes out of discipline. There is a beautiful Bengali saying, it's difficult a bit to translate, how discipline helps us. Khete khete bhaloi lachche. You go on eating and it tastes better. Perhaps it doesn't make sense to our Western devotees. The thing is, we are creatures of habit. Whatever we are habituated, whether it is good or bad is not the point. Habit makes us develop a liking for it. So, this discipline is the root how we can develop interest. That is why so much Sri Ramakrishna insists on discipline, cultivation of holy company, etc. Whether you like it or not, because if you like, then there is no need for discipline. Your very liking will make you do things. But unfortunately, in the field of religion, we are dealing with an unknown quantity. We do not know God. We are not too sure whether how God really, you know, whether He will help us. One of the ideas is God should help us. You know this story? An atheist was walking on a mountain road, slipped unfortunately, was tumbling down. There was a big valley, and on the way caught a branch and was hanging there. So he looked up. It was a long way up. Looked down, far below, jetting rocks were staring at him. So he thought, this is the right time to call on God, see whether there is anybody. So looked up and said, is there anyone up there? A gentle, sweet voice came, yes, I am God. Will you help me? Sure, let go of the branch. I will catch you from the below. He thought a little, looked up and said, is there anyone else up there? You see, we are dealing with a God about whom we heard, we read, and we have a little bit of faith, but we are not ready to completely let go. That's one problem. The other problem is all around us, especially nowadays, tremendous amount of temptations, the way people advertise, the things that we see, and the thought, more importantly, more viciously, the thought waves that are going on in the minds of people all the time. You know, we are believers in the power of the certain thoughts. We constantly broadcast thoughts. If they are good thoughts, we are very fortunate. But unfortunately, they are all worldly thoughts. And that is why we have to live in this world, in that atmosphere, fight against these odds, and yet we have to progress in spiritual life. What is it that can save us? Discipline is the one thing that can save us. Let me give you a beautiful example of what really this discipline means. There was a great soul, saint in South India called Ramanuja, and he had a disciple, an old disciple. And Ramanuja was asked by this disciple, "At what can I do to serve you?" Ramanuja was the guru, teacher. Ramanuja said that if you want to serve me, this is what I would like you to do. Stay at your home, and every day I go to the temple. On my way back to my home, I will be passing your home, and there you will be sitting. And then I will wash your feet and drink the water of that washed feet. Now, it's Indians do that to their teacher. They wash, they touch the guru's feet and they want the dust, you know. Unfortunately, I am not considered very valuable because I don't produce much dust. And what little dust is there is covered with socks. It's a faith that a devotee or a disciple considers the feet of the guru as lotus feet, as very holy. So Ramanuja told, this is the great service you can do, because his disciple was a very old man, old Brahmin. Ramanuja wanted to drink his water as a discipline for his devotion. And the old man said, this is my Guru's commandment, I will abide by it. So every day at noon he used to sit, and Ramanuja used to return from the temple. On the way he will wash his guru, his disciple's feet, drink it and go on. One day Ramanuja was preoccupied, he forgot, and he went straight home, and he completely forgot. At night, at about midnight, before going to bed, he remembered that he asked his disciple every day to sit there, and he knew his disciple would not eat food, would not move from the place until the guru comes there. Immediately Ramanuja went there, found the man, old man, whole day without eating, drinking, sitting exactly in the same place, and he went, washed his feet immediately, drank it and apologized and sent the old man away and came back. See the discipline. My guru told me, whether it is happy thing, unhappy thing, whether I am hungry or not hungry, it is his commandment. It is a discipline. What a wonderful discipline it is. And he did it. If you study the lives of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, one instance, Swami Abhutananda was there. One evening, at dusk, which Sri Ramakrishna considered as very holy for thinking of God, Latu Maharaj is called Swami Abhutananda, he felt tired and he was dozing. And Sri Ramakrishna rebuked him. Is this the purpose for which you have come? Then you do not need to serve me. I want my disciples to be wide awake at this time. This is a sacred time, very suitable for thinking of God, and you are falling asleep now. And the disciple, you know, in his whole life, he never again fell. He conquered sleep. Whole night he would not sleep. Only daytime, 2-3 hours he used to sleep. And the disciple's life was so great, you see, most of the daytime he used to lie down with a thick blanket covering his whole body from head to foot. This has two problems in Calcutta. It is not England. First of all, it is a very hot and humid place, Calcutta. If you just put a blanket, what do you think will happen? Second problem is even more serious. You know, even my audience, even sitting also they sleep, not to speak of lying down. If you lie down, then do you think what will happen? Then in 5 minutes, Latu Maharaj never used to sleep. He used to lie down and be absorbed in deep meditation. That was, but he had to struggle very hard to achieve that state. The point we are talking about is, discipline is the very secret of greatness in any field of life. Discipline. Nowadays, everything is taught excepting discipline. Because discipline means sacrifice. Discipline is part of renunciation. You are not given freedom. When you feel like you do it, that is not discipline. That is not freedom. You have set to do something and you will do it. So modern man has exceedingly little self-discipline outside of the sphere of work. Without such discipline, however, life becomes shattered, chaotic, and lacks in concentration. Lacks in concentration. The discipline leads to concentration. Without concentration, nobody can become great. There is an Upanishad called Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It is one of the most marvelous Upanishads in Vedantic literature. In this Upanishad, there is a statement that a man is great to the extent of his meditation. If a man can meditate, to that extent he is great. Greatness and meditation are upwards and reverse of the same coin. What is meditation? It is concentrating upon a noble subject. So just imagine that if even in ordinary art, tremendous concentration is necessary. Perhaps some of you have heard of this incident. Once, you know, the Socrates, the great philosopher, he fell to thinking particular subject. We do not know what subject it was. Just when the thought came to him, I must think about this subject, He was standing in the middle of a street. Fortunately, there were no cars in those days. And he was standing in the same posture for 24 hours. Next day, he was still seen standing in the same street. By the way, this Socrates, he was really a real philosopher, not a speculative, you know, lecturing type of philosopher, a real philosopher who had visions of God, but he was also highly humorous. He was a married man, and his wife was a shrew. He's a very humorous man. So once a young man approached him, "Sir, I want your advice." So Socrates, "On what subject?" "I want to get married. What is your advice?" Socrates replied, "Young man, go and get married. If you get a good wife, your life will turn out to be a very happy life. Otherwise, you don't lose anything. You will become a great philosopher like me." Discipline leads to concentration of the mind. And you know how Sri Ramakrishna used to be often in Samadhi. Swami Vivekananda, how much concentrated he used to be. In the Western world, people usually do not pay so much attention to this power of concentration. You know, Swami Vivekananda came and met a great philosopher called Paul Deussen. Paul Deussen invited him to his home, and Swamiji went and they had little discussions, and then an incident happened. Swamiji was in the parlor where they meet, visitors room, and it was full of books. Paul Deussen had a talk with Swamiji and he went inside for something. When he came back, he found Swamiji browsing a book in his vast library. And Paul Deussen went and wanted to again speak with Swami Vivekananda. So he went and said, "Swamiji," there was no reply. Again he asked Swamiji, there was no reply. Paul Deussen felt highly insulted that this man is arrogant enough not to reply to me. And then after some time, Swamiji became aware of Paul Deussen's presence and he apologized, "I'm sorry, were you asking something?" Paul Deussen said, "Are you really concentrating on this?" Swami Vivekananda said, "Yes." Now, what happened at that time? A new book has come just few days back, and nobody had seen that book excepting Paul Deussen. He acquired a copy of that book. Swamiji happened to read that book. So Paul Deussen said, "I asked you 2-3 times, I called out your name, you did not speak out. So were you neglecting me?" He said, "No, it's my habit. On whatever I put my mind, immediately it becomes concentrated." Paul Deussen didn't believe him. Swamiji said, "You test me. Here is a book I was absorbed in reading." Paul Deussen asked some questions from that book, which Swamiji could not have seen because it just came out 4-5 days before. Not only Swamiji answered his questions, but verbatim he quoted from that book, page after page. Paul Deussen could not say anything because here was a test. You know that whatever Swami Vivekananda had done, and that was absolutely, he used to put his mind on that. That's why he was so great. And that same truth holds good for any great person. Greatness is proportionate to concentration, power of concentration. That concentration is a necessary condition for the mastery of an art is hardly necessary to prove. Concentration is rare in our culture. On the contrary, our culture leads to an unconcentrated and diffused mode of life, hardly paralleled anywhere else. You do many things at once. You read, listen to the radio, talk, smoke, eat, drink, all at the same time. And he gives an example. Smoking is one of the symptoms of this lack of concentration. It occupies hand, mouth, eye and nose at the same time. So first is discipline. Second requirement is discipline leads to concentration. And is it so easy to acquire the power of concentration? You know, how stupid in some ways. People come and ask, once a person came and first time and fortunately last time. He never says, saw him afterwards. After my talk, I was sitting in the interview room and he came, introduced himself. And he said, Swamiji, I have a question to ask of you. I said, fine, what is it? He said, I want to ask about meditation and samadhi. First I asked him, let me ask you a question. How much time do you meditate? He said, I meditate, 5-10 minutes every day. Okay, now what is your question? Question is, can you explain me what is samadhi? A man who meditates 5 minutes a day wants to know what is samadhi like. I told him, I only know, I cannot explain, but I can give you samadhi in 5 minutes. Quickest way of attaining samadhi, take a big stick and give a good blow. And that would be instantaneous samadhi. This is an age of instantaneous gratification. What is the necessary thing for achieving concentration? Satu dirghakala nairantarya abhyasat. Patanjali, the father of yoga, he himself poses a question. When does a man achieve concentration? And the answer given is, for a long, long time, unbroken, disciplined, purposive practice will bring that result. How long? Is a very interesting question. How long will it take? And he himself answered it. It depends upon what speed you are progressing. If you are walking towards London, it will take several days. If you are taking a bike, it will be quicker. And if you go by car, it will be even quicker. If you go by helicopter, it will be even quicker. You know, a man was in a city walking, very busy city, all the four roads were, cars were rushing here and there. So a policeman was directing. In India many times, in the past, policemen used to direct the traffic. Here also it was there. So this man went and stood there in the middle. He asked, can you tell me the shortest route to the hospital? The police said, if you just to happen to stand there for 2-3 minutes, you will reach the hospital the quickest way. It may take lives together. Do not become impatient. So what is the condition necessary for concentration? Patience. So Eric Fromm says that a third factor is patience. Again, anyone who ever tries to master an art knows that patience is necessary. If you want to achieve anything, if one is after quick results, one never learns an art. Yet for modern man, patience is as difficult to practice as discipline and concentration. Our whole industrial system fosters exactly the opposite. What is it? Quick. All our machines are designed for quickness. The car and aeroplane bring us quickly to our destination. And the quicker, the better. Modern man thinks he loses something, time, when he does not do things quickly. Yet he doesn't know what to do with the time he gains, except kill it. What a paradoxical statement. All our entertainment industry is designed with only one purpose in mind. What is it? How to kill time. And patience. How impatient we become, You have you heard about road rage? A car in front is passing. This actually happened. One of our devotees told me. A man was traveling in a car and he was driving a little bit slowly. A man behind, he was very impatient. He was putting on the horn. But the man in the front, for some reason he didn't give way. So the man behind, you know what he did? He passed through the other lane and again entered into the same lane and started, going in front of this car which didn't give way to him. And suddenly at some point he put a brake. Now this man wasn't expecting it. His car went and rammed itself against this. He broke his, neck or back. And he is still suffering from it. Road rage, aeroplane rage, television rage, You heard about television rage? You know, suppose there is only one television and three kids. One kid wants to watch something. The other kid, grown-up kid, wants to watch something else. So what does the grown-up kid say? He will go and give one slap to this younger one and then change the channel. The latest rage is called internet rage. Yes, a case came, you know, just few weeks back. Two people were chatting and one fellow felt insulted, internet chatting. So he got the IP address and went to that fellow, rang the doorbell. When he came out, caught hold of him, gave him internet rage. Of course, we all know what is called religious rage. It is one of the oldest phenomena. You know, this my religion is superior to your religion. If you don't follow my religion, I will come and kill you. Even today it is happening. See, in how many ways man is becoming impatient. On the contrary, those who want to master an art, you know, there is a beautiful Zen incident. I mentioned it also. It is worth mentioning again and again. There was a Japanese in Japan, you know, Zen Buddhism, and there is in what is called there was a master of archery, Zen master. He was a master in archery. There was a young man who wanted to become his disciple, and he had his parents to serve to. So this disciple went to the master and said, "Master, if I become your disciple and work very diligently, how much time will it take to become a master?" And the Zen master replied, "Oh, well, it will take about 5 years. Suppose I work day and night, how much time it will take?" It will take about 20 years. Mm-hmm. "Suppose I work even harder day and night," mm-hmm. and he said, "it will take 50 years. What is the point? The point is, it is not how hard you work, how patiently you work. Because this man, the more you are in a hurry, the less likely you can master anything. You know, even changing dress, if you do it very calm and quietly, you can do it very quickly. But if you do it in a hurry, it takes a long time. Have you not noticed that? So, patience, if you don't become patient, then you will become a patient. Better develop a little bit of patience. It is very necessary. So this is the third condition is, infinite patience is very necessary. Swami Vivekananda uses another word for it, perseverance. Infinite perseverance. Even if you fail a million times, don't give it up. When can you persevere? Only when you have infinite patience can we really persevere. Fourth, eventually, a condition of learning any art is a supreme concern with the mastery of the art. If the art is not something of supreme importance, the apprentice will never learn it. There was a wonderful incident. Sri Ramakrishna mentions it. You know, it's Mahabharata, where the five brothers fight with the 100 Kauravas, Pandavas and Kauravas. So there was this master of archery called Dronacharya, and he trained both the princes from both families, and there was a test who would be the greatest archer. And you see the Dronacharya set up a test to test their skill. What he did, he bound one bird at the topmost branch of a tree, and he called the people. You know how he tested? So he called one and said, "So, you see, the test is to pierce the eye of the bird. Do you understand it?" "Yes." "And what do you see in front of you? Do you see the tree?" "Yes, sir, I see the tree." "Out. You have failed the test." There was no need to discharge the arrow. Just the very fact that you could see the tree, you are a failure. The next man came. "And what do you see? Do you see the tree?" "No, sir, I don't see the tree." "What do you see?" "I see the branch." "Out. You have failed." The third man came. "What do you see? Do you see the branch?" "No, sir." "What do you see?" "I see the bird." "Out. You have failed." At last came Arjuna. So the teacher asked him, do you see the tree? No. Do you see the branches? No. Do you see the bird? No. What do you see? I see only the eye of the bird. Dronacharya said, you do not need to discharge your arrow. I know it will go on pierce. Those who studied Mahabharata, they know how he obtained the hand of Draupadi. There was a test. See, there was a fountain. Above the fountain there was a revolving wheel, and to that wheel a fish was tied. Now Arjuna had to look into the pool, see the reflection of the revolving fish, and looking at that, he has to pierce the eye of the fish. If he could do that, what a master he was. What is the point here? The point is to be able to come to that state where a person can see only the eye of the bird. Here eye of the bird means the goal. How much patience is necessary? How much of discipline is necessary? How much of concentration is necessary? So discipline, then concentration, then patience, and all this for how long? You see, the thing is, love means it is not a 1 hour affair. It is an affair for life after life. As the great Saint Rabia, I admire really this great Saint Rabia. One of her sayings was, O Lord, if I love you in hope of gaining paradise, exclude me from the paradise. If I love you for fear of hell, then burn me in hell. But if I love you for the sake of loving you, then exclude me not from your presence. This is what Sri Ramakrishna used to say, Ahaituka Bhakti, devotion, motiveless devotion, devotion for its own sake, not for anything else. That kind of love can come only when our whole life is concentrated on that love. So eventually, a condition of learning any art is a supreme concern with the mastery of the heart. If the art is not of something of supreme importance, the apprentice will never learn it. He may be a dabbler. He may learn a little bit. He is not going to be a master. One more point must be made with regard to the general conditions of learning an art. What is that? It's a very interesting point and very important point. What is it? One doesn't begin to learn an art directly, but indirectly as it were. One must learn a great number of other and often seemingly disconnected things before one starts with the art itself. This is a wonderful psychological point. I will give an example. Suppose you want to learn a song. I imagine you are lovers of music. You want to learn a new song. So what do you do? Don't attack it directly. Just put on the song and go on listening to it once or twice. Don't go on 100. I will not stop listening to it until I master it. Go on putting it on, going on listening 50 times, 100 times, 300 times. It won't work. You know what you should do? Just listen once or twice. Put it off. Do something else. And what happens? Something mysterious, something marvelous happens. That just you heard once or twice, it goes deep down into the subconscious. It starts working from there. And then after a few days, you listen to it once or twice. Then forget about it. Then after a few days, you will see one day morning you get up, you are whistling the song so beautifully like a copycat. So what has happened here? The subconscious has taken over and it has prepared you, it learned itself practically, subconsciously. If you think that this is not right, read the book by Bertrand Russell, The Art of Happiness. In that book he says, you know, see, there is how to be happy. Happiness, don't attack happiness directly. You can't go to a shop and say, I want to buy one liter of happiness. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing like that. Happiness is always the indirect result of doing something worthwhile. So he says, suppose there is a problem. You concentrate your mind, do your best to attack the problem and work on it without respite for some time. Then forget about it and go about something else. Take up some other problem, something completely disconnected with this subject. And you know, the subconscious will take it over. Meanwhile, it's not sleeping. It is working. And one day, early morning, you will see the problem had solved of itself. This is what Erich Fromm is talking here. And I know it works. So any art, you just do it a little bit of work. Give a little bit of food. I can also compare, perhaps not a very good example. Suppose you want to become strong and go on stuffing yourself with food. Do you think you will become very strong? Eat a little food and leave off. Go and do something. What happens? The digestive system goes to work. It digests what we have already eaten and it will prepare you for the next meal. In that way, slowly, slowly we gain more and more strength. So that applies to the art of devotion, to how to progress in the life of devotion. Now, one of the things Sri Ramakrishna used to insist very much is cultivate the company of the holy. How does it benefit? Not directly. I know many people who cultivate the company of sadhus, monks, holy people, but obviously they do not seem to feel any benefit at that point of time. I think many of you can understand what I am talking about. Long after that, many, many years perhaps later, suddenly what we have cultivated earlier comes to our mind. Oh, you know, that monk used to tell me that, and the other one used to do this to me. It gives tremendous amount of, you know, lift, inspiration, happiness, many things happen. You know, this is a wonderful subject by itself. I don't want to deviate so much. Have you ever thought that in your childhood, perhaps you have eaten something, and the very remembrance of that wonderful thing you have eaten gives you more happiness than what you are eating right now? But don't worry, what you are eating right now, it will give you happiness after a few years. It is the nature of memory, psychology. Learning is a very important art. You just pay a little bit of attention, give a little bit holiday to the mind, again pay attention. That way we are likely to learn quicker than frontal attack, intensive attack. This is like warfare. You attack, do something, withdraw, then attack. Otherwise it will be like the light brigade. It is considered to be a heroic act, but it was a terrible disaster looked at posthumously. You know that? Light Brigade, the Second World War, is a terrible disaster. So that's what Erich Fromm is pointing. One doesn't begin to learn an art directly, but indirectly as it were. One must learn a great number of other and often seemingly disconnected things before one starts with the art itself. If one wants to become a master in any art, one's whole life must be devoted to it, or at least related to it. One's own person becomes an instrument in the practice of the art and must be kept fit according to the specific functions it has to fulfill. With regard to the art of loving, this means that anyone who aspires to become a master in this art must begin by practicing discipline, concentration and patience throughout every phase of his life. There is nothing called spiritual holiday. But continuous spiritual practice can often become, to use a straightforward word, boredom. You know, anything, any higher subject, if we are not fit, it becomes a boredom. You know, you have been sitting here for almost an hour's time. How many times you have taken holiday in between this hour and went on a round the world trip? And I am glad that you did that, because you could not have stood it. There was a bishop who was, you know, giving a talk. And many, almost 90% of the heads started nodding at every statement he was making. At the end of the talk, he thanked all of them and said, "I am so glad that my audience, even in their sleep also, agree with what I say." Most of the lectures, you know, they become boring because the subject is very high, one person's monotonous voice comes. But don't think it is a waste, because even in your sleep, there is something called sleep learning. Many things go, they are entering into your ears. They go into your mind. Anyway, I will give an incident and stop this talk here. There was a devotee of Sri Ramakrishna. He was a very hard-working man, and he used to come to Dakshineswar. It was his devotion which brought him. And he used to come, bow down to the gods in the temples and bow down to Sri Ramakrishna, spread a mat and go to sleep. And at about 10:30 or so, Sri Ramakrishna would wake him up and he will bow down once more to him and go home. Have you read about it? Now, some devotee criticized him and said, "This man, what is the purpose of his coming? He comes here and only sleeps." Sri Ramakrishna said, "Don't disturb him. Do you know he works very hard? He has that much faith in me that even sleeping in my presence brings so much of benefit." Sri Ramakrishna did not disturb him. And there is a reason. There are two reasons. One, the very presence of a holy man can affect us even if we are sleeping there, or we are not very much mindful about it, because that is the power of the holiness vibration. Second, that there is the psychological factor that we know that now the psychologists know, children, most of the babies, what do they do? They sleep, seem to be sleeping. But most of the psychologists have uncovered the facts that the babies are learning at a very faster speed even during their sleep. They are absorbing the accent, the way of behavior, and the language. You know how many languages they can learn, these babies, even during the sleeping period. The scientists have uncovered very little of the secrets of the mind. So we believe even sleep learning is a way of learning. There must be, of course, a conscious way of learning, but even sleep in the presence of holy people, or sleep on a subject, we say, you know, sleep on a subject means what? That let the unconscious take over and do the work. How do we know that this man was not absorbing the holiness of Sri Ramakrishna and growing in devotion to God? So it is good to cultivate holy company. This is what Eric Fromm is telling, that if we want to learn any art, especially here the art of loving, be in the presence of people who love, and we absorb not so much by their instruction, but by being in their very presence. So there are wonderful points we will discuss in our future classes, but to sum up, to learn to love God, like any other art, it is an art, and like any other art, it requires discipline, concentration, and infinite amount of patience, and above all, it can be learned more indirectly rather than directly. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.